How many of you have made significant progress on your final project? Oh, Bill, you're going to set yourself up for physical violence by the rest of the class. Okay, I'll tell you where we're at on the grading of the projects, midterms. We're a fair ways along. In fact, Scott has graded them all once. I've read every one of them at least once and have actually figured out all of the algorithms that everyone did. Some of your explanations left something to be desired, but that's okay. But I'm going through it, and I'll be a lot slower in getting my comments because I'm writing a reviewer page on each paper. But I've already commented on your report, stuff that was good, etc. In fact, one of you was really good. I was really surprised because you actually referenced Professor Se-Young Oh, who got his PhD at the same time I did. So I thought that was a very good reference and commented on that. I did note, and I don't know if this is good or bad, the papers that had a modest number of references were usually the best papers. So, you know, the point is, take a look at what others have done, pick the best of what they have done, and implement that in your paper. And that usually worked pretty well. But that's just an observation. Scott has said that he is going to be really happy to work with anyone that needs extra data, that wants to do a particular project. He came up with a new project yesterday, which is, it turns out, we have need to find the horizon of a image. That is the boundary between Earth and sky. And I think you might have thought about why that's useful, since a number of you noticed it in your images. A lot of you cropped the sky out. Okay, and obviously there's a big difference in color palette between sky and ground, light and bright, all kinds of reasons. Most of you did some kind of color segmentation or color image processing, concentrating on white and yellow, and usually followed by a Huff transform. But some people did sometimes much more interesting things, which didn't even require color. What's the whole idea of the lines on the road? One of the idea of the lines on the road is their high contrast with the road. Derivatives do a lot. Or similar type operators. Another thing, not many of you necessarily remember to Gaussian filter before you do a lot of things. Remember, you don't need all of the high frequency noise, and if you Gaussian filter, that will fill in a lot of holes. So only a couple of you actually remembered to filter before you did a lot of these things, and it could make life easier for you. Made the boundaries of objects smoother. Filled holes and things, a couple comments like that. But there were some very successful black and white ones in addition to the color. But we will be getting them back, and you will probably get two graded versions, Scott's version and my version. And I think I may get Scott's grades tonight. So we'll get them all back to you. Now, oh, is that the right one? Let it be. I think it is. Cool. Now, he didn't do Gaussian low-pass filtering, but he did the equivalent of it by smearing, which is, instead of filtering within the frame, he averaged over different frames. So, all of that was wonderful. Okay, and I just got a disc from Scott yesterday. I think I have something like 9,000 new images. So if you have a special request for anything, I just got it yesterday. I haven't even opened it yet. Now, any questions, any thoughts, or anything about the final project? The final project is far more open. Okay? A lot of the images here, and by the way, probably the easiest one, you're always interested in those kind of comments, for your final, since you've already done some of this stuff, might be in general road detection. You've already done color segmentation. Most of the way in which roads are found is color segmentation. But you look at what's in front of you and assume it's a road and throw it out. And then what's actually really cool is potentially fit boundaries to it and get an estimate of which way the road is turning or where available, in big four-way intersections, that's not a big deal. All you have is asphalt everywhere. Okay? But going around a traffic circle or something, knowing patterns like that, being able to see, very handy, very useful. But probably some kind of road is good. A couple people actually did some very nice work in not analyzing the whole image, but analyzing parts of the image. And for example, and this is very similar to some of the work that Stanford did with Stanley, you assume that you're on a road surface and that what that is must be drivable surface. In the case of Stanley, oftentimes it was red dirt in the desert, dirt roads, or gravel. And you can predict that out and say, well, maybe there's a fork in the road, or I see the road curving off to the right, or whatever. And you can match that with maps. Okay? Now, mapping reminds me, Thursday, seminar. I expect to see you all there, if you can make it. I think that's standard white 411. But it will be on the fast slam stuff, but I think they're going to use a particle filter instead of a Wiener filter. But emphasis is all on the same stuff. So, any quick questions on projects? It would be nice, because I can give you hints. Yeah, we'd like to see you all do really, really good projects. And I was talking to Scott. We're thinking of asking some of the five, maybe something like the five most innovative or interesting projects. Probably not in this class, because we only have a couple lectures left. But probably to maybe give a series of talks to maybe the DARPA project. Or I suppose we could always fit it in as a GSA seminar. Which, by the way, I think the ECE faculty will be voting on next Friday in their faculty meeting. That's the one question I never remember. I've got to look up and read the email. Does anyone remember the email that I sent and what the date was? I keep thinking like... It's a team. I know the absolute final date for me to turn in the grades is the 22nd. And I want a couple days that Scott and I can grade like mad and do a good job of it.
Is there anything else to do between now?
I've been making it easy for you. It may have been... Ooh, that's nice. Okay. It may have been too easy. We'll see. But I will say that most of the papers were fairly well written. Just the algorithms were a little hard on a couple of yours to read. But my remarks will be a little slower, but if any of you are really anxious about the remarks on yours, you can probably come by and talk to me, and I can give you informal feedback right away. For some reason, I have the older Mac, and you've got to reboot when you hook it up. The new ones don't have this problem. Okay, so we've done the fast slam. We've done the final project. I've given you sort of a quick debriefing. All of the grades that I saw, and I didn't glance at all of Scott's, looked like A's and B's. I might give some C's. Just to keep you in suspense.
Scott was mentioning in one of our calibration is something.
Oh, yes. He has a couple special projects that he would love to have people work on. We've talked about camera calibration. And my suspicion is if you work with Scott, you can get him to tell you how to do it all. And we have one real interesting challenge, which we don't know the answer to. We talked a tiny bit about stereo early on in the semester. We've actually got a stereo camera. I don't know what it actually does. Neither does Scott. But if you would like to work with real 3D data, the 3D kind of data that I am familiar with, and I don't know how this camera works, is actually going to be what's technically known as a 2.5D. What it does is it gives you a surface of the image, and you'll have an XYZ coordinate of everything. So those are two projects. Scott's willing to help. Scott's willing to talk to anyone. Just send him an email. I'm willing to talk to you about your projects. Send us an email. You don't have much time. Time is running out. Friday is the 1st of December. And if I'll check up on the date. I keep forgetting to do this. But something like the 14th or thereabouts is right. I will give you an official date. Oh, no wonder. I forgot to plug it in. I hope that's not going to mess it up. I think I've got to reboot again. This cable is... Oh, that's a good sign. Nope. Oh, now we have a good sign. Okay. Now, what we're going to do today is I'm going to try and cover all of Chapter 9. And it turns out that's not impossible to do. And actually, one person used image morphology in their project, their midterm. started on the morphology the last time. We talked about the erosion and the dilation. Okay. Dilate makes stuff bigger. Erosion makes stuff smaller. And the key thing is it does it in a structured manner. Think of the symbol for erosion as it's subtracting elements. Okay. Think of the symbol for dilation, then it's adding elements. The key thing is the structuring elements. Now, most of the examples I'm going to do today are going to have a square structuring element, 3x3. They do not need to be that way. They can be considerably different if, for example, you want to eliminate holes or horizontal lines. You can selectively eliminate and process chips, burning objects, and the key thing is the center. Because what we're doing is we match that element with the corresponding element in the image. So, for example, if this is our image, the structuring element goes over like so. If it matches, we'll do a certain operation. If it doesn't match, we'll do a certain operation. What we do depends on the precise operator. And the difference between the erosion and the dilation is that this pattern matches this pattern. With dilation, we put a 1 there. With erosion, we take the 1 away and make it a 0. So we're adding and subtracting pixels. And we're starting with binary objects. And we went through this the last time. The only thing to remember, okay, dilation, we're taking this, we match it, so we put that on. If this is all 1s, we're going to put that on a pixel element, and what it will do is it will fill everything around it by 1s. Now, erosion and dilation are essential to all of today's lectures, so you want to have these down really well. Okay, let's suppose we want to do erosion. Erosion is, we're going to take a look, and I'm assuming these are all 1s here in the picture to begin with. In the case of erosion, we take that, we put it there, unless this matches now. You see it's different, we're going to take away the 1. In which case, that would remove that, and then we'd move it. And you see, the different effect is dilation is effectively putting a row, if this were a square object here, it would effectively pad it with a row of 1s around it. If it were a dilation, it would effectively remove the outer 1 pixel wide rim or boundary of an object. So these things, and we're going to see in the examples, can be really good for finding boundaries, things like that. They can also be really good, for example, if you have broken lane markers, holes and stuff, you can actually fill in little holes. Now, I'm going to do all of this stuff in black and white, and at the very end, grayscale. Technically, the zoom type. Technically, you can do it in color. Okay? And you can do all kinds of stuff in color, and that's actually an area that someone could do a thesis or even a dissertation. Now, this is interesting because right here we are doing an erosion by this element. It's going to work just like I said here. And basically, it doesn't have to be a 3x3. It can be bigger. By making it bigger, what will happen is it will remove more when you erode. So if this is a 3x3, we're going to end up removing 1. If we had a 4 or a 5, we're going to remove more rows the whole way around. We can control the thickness. And that's where, for example, what it's showing is that basically it will remove, as it goes around, half of the thickness of the object. Now, technically, One of the things is that, and if you get into the math of the set theory, you're supposed to take the structuring element and flip it diagonally. Since these are always symmetric in what we're doing right now, that doesn't do anything. But keep this in mind if you ever want to do something that isn't square. If you pick something that might be an L or a long, narrow, well, long, narrow, but, you know, those aren't, if you have an asymmetric object, that's when the reflection will confuse you at first. Okay, now these are really good, different kinds of structuring elements for example, finding the center of an object. Now I'm going to show you a whole bunch of different ways of finding centers. But one way is if you have something the size of what you're looking for, and this, the way now erosion works in this case, is the only time we'll get a result in the output, which is what this is when this fits entirely within. We can express it in set theory by simply saying that, okay, the intersection is not zero between the sets. And if this matches that, at that point, we would put a 1 in. And it would match as we would translate it along. And you see, we would get from this now a horizontal line representing the axis or the set of axes, set of centers of the object. This kind of operation, if you have well-defined objects, can be really good for robotics because, for example, if you know the axes of the object, you can figure out where to grasp it. Or it can be that that gives you different kinds of information, not about orientation. We can't do that very well with morphology. Okay? We did this one the last time, and this is pretty interesting, and this is a key thing. Erosion and dilation are related to each other. And in fact, this is really neat. We take a structuring element, okay, which is 13 pixels on a side. It's pretty big. These are 15, and I think these are 9, 7. There's different sizes, but there's 15. Okay, we're going to erode this with a 13 by 13. Think about it. There's that 15, and yes, indeed, I can fit 13 in it. But what are the possible ways in which I can fit a 13 by 13 inside a 15 by 15? There's not very many of them. And the set of possible centers would end up being just something like that. In effect, it's the difference. What happens with these smaller ones when I have a 13 by 13 that I put on top of it and I want to know if the set matches? It doesn't. It's too small. I can never get a match. So all small objects would be replaced by, well, you have to watch out because, remember, they're showing the objects, this would be 1, these would be zeros, so every time I don't get a match, I replace it by a 0. It becomes black. Look at what happened over here. Every small element got replaced by a 0. This might be a good technique, by the way, to get rid of little broken pieces of lane marker, stuff like that. It's great for getting rid of little things. In this case, I don't know, I think it might actually have been a star image. But the idea is we get rid of all the small stuff by using a structuring element, which is just a bit smaller than this. We erode everything, gets rid of all the smaller objects. Only 3 are left. Now, this is a common technique. I dilate it. I erode to get rid of everything small. I dilate to get it back to where it was. So by dilating, okay, with the same structuring element, I erode it, but with a 13 by 13, dilate by a 13 by 13, I get back just the objects of the right size. Now, this is not necessarily going to work in real-world images easily because the orientation is assumed. In the real world, if I move objects around, and they'd be at different angles and stuff, they would behave differently. But this is just to show you the effects of erosion and dilation. Now, you notice what we did here was we eroded and dilated, and we kept only the largest objects. We can erode and dilate arbitrary objects. And this is what's called the rolling ball analogy. This is the structuring element. And usually when we open and close, we think about round structuring elements, but it doesn't have to be. It can be other things. But basically, what the opening is the set of all possible translations of that set which fits inside. Okay? An erosion by a dilation. Okay? What this is really, really useful for is I can take now, okay, my opening, subtract it from the original. I can get the corners of an object if I want. Okay. Or you can think of this as sort of low-pass filtering the geometry and getting rid of sharp edges. It depends on your application. Like last time, I talked about a way you could find broken teeth on a gear, or maybe even count the teeth on a gear. Same kind of technique. We can do exactly the opposite. Okay? You can erode followed by a dilation, or you can dilate followed by an erosion. One's an opening, one's a closing. With the opening, it's equivalent to rolling a ball inside. Okay? With a closing, it's equivalent to rolling a ball outside. Okay? And notice what happens. On the previous one with the opening, we could find sharp outer corners. Okay? We could subtract them off. What happens with the closing is it's the set, okay, that doesn't intersect the original object. And what happens is when we get into these convex angles, we can't fit the structuring element in any further. So it stops there, and basically it rounds off interior angles. Okay? Usually you'll use a round structuring element. Don't have to. Now, you can do these, use these. They were used an awful lot in like the 80s and 90s for robot grasping and manipulation and stuff. Because here's a case of, you know, this might be an object that's on a conveyor belt in front of your robot, and what you want to do is maybe figure out where to grasp it. And what you can do is you can take a small structuring element. In this case, it's a circle. And we're going to pick the circle, which is going to be larger than this little area which connects these two pieces of the block. You know, that might be some complex machined object. So by picking it larger, what happens when we erode that? And you can, you know, see the path. It's the set, okay, that fits inside. And if that's my structuring element, I can't fit it into the fingers. I can't fit it into the connecting piece here. And so what happens is basically I get the interior of that object, and since these are bigger fingers, I'll keep the fingers there. Okay? So I erode it. Now I dilate. Okay? So I'm going to take that object and dilate it. Okay? And notice, what happens is, I sort of get some kind of structurally low-pass filtered object. Not low-pass filtering like the way we did it before, which smeared things out. What it's doing is, it's doing it with the boundaries of objects. And that's what makes it useful. This, by the way, is the symbol now for the closing. And then there's the symbol for an opening. Closing, closed circle, opening, an open circle. Okay. So now, let's take the same original object, same structuring element, let's dilate it in the first place. Okay. Basically, this stretches the boundaries out. Okay. Notice what it did here. It closed off that internal little channel. Now, okay, there's the dilation. Let's take the dilated object, erode it. Okay. Once I eliminate geometry, I can't recreate it. You know, once I've gotten rid of that channel, or like up here, once I got rid of the fingers by either an erosion or a dilation, I cannot magically make it come back. Okay? It's gone. And that might be good. You know, it might be that I just wanted to know the outline of an object. Okay? But this is just to show you, and this, by the way, now, the dilation followed by the erosion, closed circle. Okay, that's our closing. That's our opening. One followed by the other, but they're just done in different order. And notice, substantially different objects after a result of processing. Now, that may not be the only thing you want to do. This is actually an interesting one. Okay, fingerprint analysis. And these are black and white images. And if you take a look, there's a lot of black, or there's a lot of white noise on black. And if you look in here, there's black noise on white. So there's salt and pepper noise. You used median filters before. This is a black and white image now. Only zeros and ones. So what we're going to do is basically dilate it, erode it with the right structuring element. It's a 3x3, and it'll get rid of all the little specks out here. Okay? But it opens up all kinds of gaps in here, in the ridges. So what you do is, what makes sense, you dilate the ridges back out to make them big. Okay? Bigger. Okay, but now, okay, this is a considerable cleanup from here to here, okay, that was an opening. But there's little holes in the ridges. It's not really very good. So what are we going to do? We're going to do it almost in the opposite order. We're going to dilate it, and that's going to fill in the gaps in the ridges. Okay? And then now, we're going to erode it to get it back to the original size of the ridges in the first place. So think of this. All we've done is go through, okay, erosion, dilation, dilation, erosion. Just followed one after the other, did them in order, and did a pretty nice job of cleaning up the object. You know, that's not too bad. Now, here's a real strange algorithm. New symbol. It's called the hit or miss algorithm. What it will do is it will return the location of the center of objects that you're looking for in the image. So, for example, if you wanted to find all objects of size X in an image, what it would do is return the location of the center of X. That's all you'd get. And it's really, it looks very complicated, but it's effectively done in two parts. One way, we're going to erode objects down. The other way, we're going to dilate objects up. And then we're going to take the intersection of the two. And the intersection will end up being, if, for example, this is the structuring element, the intersection will be only the elements of exactly that size. Okay, so you could use it to find all squares of exactly that size and ignore the big ones and the little ones. Now, the way it works, okay, and this we've got to go through and think about it. The first thing is we're going to create sort of a complement of x, okay, over here. So we're going to take our original x, and what we want to do is we want an object which is a boundary around x. Now, we don't care how big the boundary is as long as it's bigger than x. So this is at least a couple pixels nice and clean the whole way around. Okay? Now, the other thing we're going to do is we're going to complement this original set. These are all the objects. They're ones. This is background zero. We're going to flip it. Okay? So we've got two different things here to work with. Okay? Now, the first thing we want to do is we want to erode A up here by X. Okay, now, you know what an erosion is going to do. It's going to get rid of all objects which are smaller than it. So, this is the object. This is our structure. Well, just the inside here is our structuring element. That would be our structuring element. As we move it around, there's only two places where there will be a fit inside the object. Since there's no fit here, that one goes away. It fits exactly there. We get a center, and it sits inside here. So as we move it around, you can see, well, we can move it back and forth. It'll fit in there, and it'll also fit in as we move it up and down, so we get a rectangle inside there. Okay, so that's the result of eroding this whole image by that structuring element. Now, we really sort of do something which is a little bit different. Okay, we take the complement of the set, okay, and we erode it by this thing. And this one, you have to stop and think about a minute. It's a little weird, okay. You can say where, okay, areas, well, let's take a look at this. We want it to fit around things. We don't care what's in the center. So, for example, it'll fit in here, and so we, you see what we're doing is this whole area in here, I guess if you can think of my fingers as the object and it's moving around, okay, for it to fit inside, it's going to go from there to there. So the centers are only going to be within a narrow region, and that's all that's going to be left. You get down here, it doesn't match. However, this is interesting. Notice, because this is bigger than X, it can fit right over and around this empty space. Okay, zeros match, a ring around matches, and unlike up here, I can get a 1 there. You see, this is just a 1 pixel, because that has zeros in the center. It's a hollow structuring element, so it can match that exactly. Now, notice, because it's hollow, it actually can fit around this as well. Okay? And actually, you could fit in a little rectangle there. Okay? Because you could move this, and it would enclose that. There's no way it can enclose this, so all of this goes away. Okay? And this just shows out here, you notice this is physically bigger. The idea is the complement of the set go out to infinity. Okay? But the key thing is these three objects in here can't fit in, so that's eroded away. It actually fits, this fits entirely on the inside, so I actually have a rectangle, and here I get a dot. So now, notice what happens with the hit or miss. Okay, this gave me objects larger than my structuring element. This gives me objects smaller than my structuring element. The intersection of the two is only the set of points that's exactly the same as my structuring element. So it's a set intersection, and that's where you get only one. Now, personally, I don't think it's a very useful algorithm, but it's hard to understand. Now, here's some stuff that's actually more useful, more interesting. Boundary extraction. Okay? If this is the original object, okay, and, you know, you could see a boundary which would look like that very easily just by looking at that. Now, this is just a small object, but getting the boundary of an object is really useful. Okay? So, think about what happens if we move that around. If we erode the original element by the structuring element, basically, it's going to remove the outer row of pixels, right? So, there it is, with the outer row removed. Okay. Actually, in here, it'll remove. Well, actually, it will remove just the outer row. Now, think about it. What's the boundary? If I have the original object, and I've got something which is basically the interior of the object, what's the difference between the two? The boundary. I can extract the boundary from stuff now. I don't have to do gradients. I don't have to do derivatives. I can just take an object, shrink it, subtract it from the original, bang, there's a boundary. Here's Abraham Lincoln's boundary. An original black and white image. I think we used a 3x3 structuring element and just ran it around. And look at that. Gives a nice outline. Would that have been difficult to do with derivatives? Yes. You'd have had to play with the derivative, the thresholding afterwards. Absolutely. These morphological things, once you get the hang of them, are actually pretty useful. Now, here's a different kind of thing you might like. Okay? What if you have sort of a noisy object, but it's got holes in it? What if you have the boundary and you want to fill it in? This is sort of the complement of what we just did. Okay? So, actually, we're going to start by complementing the object. And we're going to do something very different, okay? And this is important. We're picking a structuring element which only shows if something is four-connected. That's right, it's up and down, left and right. So it's a four-connected structuring element, okay? Now, this algorithm requires that you give it a starting point. You have to tell it, here's a point inside. So, we start by picking this point right here. Okay? It's inside. Okay? And what we're going to do is we're going to do what's called a conditional dilation. If we did a dilation of this point, okay, the center matches, okay, and then we'd fill the north, south, east, west pixels with one around it. And you would get a cross, just like the structuring element. What the heck is a conditional dilation? Okay? Conditional dilation is we want to intersect it with the complement. Okay? So if we had that, and we intersect it with the complement, the boundary points don't get added. So you don't get those two. You get these two, though, which are in the interior. So this morphological stuff is a completely different way of thinking. Okay, it's all connectivity, it's all topology. But a conditional dilation, you can put boundaries or regions where you don't want it to expand into. Okay, so you can put limits. And the limit here just happens to be the boundary. Okay? So we can do that conditional dilation and just continue it, and you do it, basically, you can dilate images over and over again until they stop. It can't grow past this, because that's a four-connected boundary, and what you get is you've completely filled in the object. You know, you could do a variant of median filtering to do that kind of thing, but you may get applications like this, which are completely different. Supposedly, this is a set of ball bearings looked at with a camera, okay? And for some reason, there's a image right smack in the middle of every one of these. If I told you to go there and eliminate all the center dots, you would have a hard time. Okay? Well, you can do a region filling algorithm where all you do is you start at any place inside one of these, and you can use this boundary as the boundary for a conditional dilation, and bang, it would eliminate the center of one or the center of all of them. The bad thing about automating this algorithm, you've got to pick one of the center points of each ball bearing. Okay? That would require some thinking and some good work. But with one thing in the middle, yes, you can do it. Now, this one is a little bit different. This relates to segmentation, which, you know, you've been doing RGB segmentation. Okay? What you can do is you can look for connected components. And what's going to happen is, this is the original object, and we're going to start with this funny crosshatched one right here. And here is our structuring element. The structuring element is 8 connected, north, south, east, west, and the diagonals as well. What we're going to do is basically move it over the original object. We'll do iterations of it. So we'll start there, we put it over it, and since that shows all the connected pixels, okay, connected, 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 and there's nothing there. So basically, it's upgraded the status of all of these. Now, you can think of these as really being the new ones. They're connected. And I just now, in future iterations, I just move it around to every one of the connected pixels and keep expanding it. And I repeat this as many times as necessary until the pixels stop changing values. So it's, the convergence is when the two images are identical, you know, when this current iteration is equal to the previous one, stop. Okay? And the key thing here is, if there were any isolated pixels, or actually if, in this case it would primarily get rid of isolated pixels. But we might have instead maybe chosen north, south, east, west, and just come up with a 4 connected object. This can be used for labeling things. Some of you used a labeling, a blob coloring algorithm or something in your midterms. You can do things like this. Now here's a real example. Counting chicken bones in chicken fillets. Okay, and the food companies do things like this. Chicken fillet with bones, x-ray image, okay, there's the original object, and this is the original grayscale image. We threshold it, and one of the things that if you were writing a computer program, you'd like to know is how many bone fragments are there inside that piece of chicken. You know, people come up with all of these measures of what's good, what's bad. You know, maybe if you're a major supermarket, you will not accept any pieces of chicken with more than 3 bones or something. I don't know. You know, I'm not in the marketing side. I'm just an engineer. Okay? But you take that. First thing you do is erode it to get rid of the little tiny things. Okay? Then we run that algorithm that we just used in the past slide to determine what's connected. Okay, you run that algorithm, and it turns out you get 15 different connected objects. And that's what segmentation algorithms are good for. Every time you find a new pixel which is connected, or a new pixel which represents a new region, you update the color. These would be what in blob coloring would be called colors. And then you can go back and keep track of the sizes of each pixel, of each component, etc. So this is a way of doing segmentation. Now there is some cooler stuff, and one of you did it in your midterm project. You did a watershed algorithm. Okay, we haven't even gotten to that yet. That's grayscale morphology, and it can be used to connect images using structuring elements. But let's go through some other stuff here. Okay, a convex hull. Anyone heard of convex hulls before? Okay, in an image processing course or? Oh, okay. Convex hull. Okay, that's true. In a sea space?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, convex hulls can be constructed for a set using morphological operations. What is a convex hull? Take an object which can have all kinds of protrusions and contortions, indentations, etc. Stretch a rubber band around it. That lowest energy boundary is the convex hull. That can be very useful in certain applications. Okay? So think of it as just simply the biggest outside boundary containing all of the objects. And it's got no concave indentations or anything. And the principle here is really sort of simple. What you want to do is you want to fill stuff in. Okay. So what we want to do, and notice, we've got rotated structuring elements, and the idea is we want to look for three vertical elements. Okay. And this actually uses a quote unquote hit or miss algorithm. Okay. And the whole idea is to find occasions of this in this image. Okay, and so it doesn't fit there, but it matches there because we would have three vertical elements. That would allow us to convert this to a 1, but it's already a 1. And so we keep going over, okay? And it doesn't change anything up here. But what happens down here? Next, when we're down here, we move across, okay, that's full. That's full, okay, but notice, there's three here. We don't care about anything over here. We'll fill this one in. So this is basically a way of saying, fill in the pixel to the immediate right of the center of three vertical pixels that are all ones. That's a pretty hard thing to say in a for statement in your program. But with morphology, it's really trivial. It's just a match, and it either happens or it doesn't. So it fills in to the right by using that structuring element. Okay? If that matches, and now there it'll fill in. So basically, you see it did fill in to the right. Now, we'd have the horizontal one. It would fill in down. We have the one on the left, on the right, notice it fills in to the left. And then finally, we have the one on the bottom, and it fills in to the top. And what do? You union all of these together, and the set of all of those is the convex hull. Now, that's not a good convex hull. Because take a look. You know, I said earlier, what is a convex hull? Sort of like stretching a rubber band over that. This is much bigger than a rubber band. This is a big convex hull. So it's not a very accurate one. There are ways of making it better. Okay. One of the ways of making it better is doing a conditional hit or miss that it doesn't exceed the boundaries, the maximum dimensions in X and Y of the original object. And so take a look. That's by restricting it to the size of the original. We would restrict it to here, 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 and here. You see, that got bigger, both vertically and horizontally, by putting the limits on it. Now that looks more like the correct convex hull. So this is a way you could do a convex hull, maybe for robot path planning. Yes?
It looks like they did it for multiple iterations.
Yes.
And you do that until it is there.
Yes. And you're going to see multiple iterations now occurring over and over and over again. Okay? Usually, we're either going to tell you one iteration, or we're going to tell you you iterate until it doesn't change anymore. This is a very interesting thing. This is how you thin an object. Okay? And the idea of thinning is sort of like skeletonizing. But you want to find sort of the structure on which you could fit all of these pixels. Is there sort of like a backbone or a structure hidden in this? And in a way, this is a recursive removal. Okay? So what we're going to do is it's the hit or miss stuff again. Okay? Notice. Okay? The don't cares. We're going to look for that. Okay? And when we find something that matches, we're going to remove it. So, you know, that matches, we remove it. That matches, we remove it. You can see how we're moving along. Okay? But notice, why does it stop here? Oh, that's a zero. That doesn't match. It stops there. So it actually keeps that little arm that went out there and it doesn't lose it. Okay? And you can continue, okay, and that's with the first structuring element. So basically, that removed vertical layers, okay? Then what we're going to do, and you can see the topology, these are all rotated. You can sort of think of this one as being rotated by 45 degrees, then by 90 degrees. So what it's doing is it's going along, and it's selectively eroding in each direction. It's really not an erosion. It's really a hit or miss because it's looking for it to match. And you see what it's doing? Because of the way we've done it, it's shrinking the boundary in each of the selective directions. Okay? And that's why, by the way, there's eight of them. Because north, south, west, and diagonals. So with remove them all in order, okay, and then look at what's left. It looks a little bit like a dog bone or something. Okay, we've thinned that. One of the key things is you don't lose corners. Okay, there's a slightly different way of doing this called a skeleton, which we'll get to in a moment. This is sort of the opposite of thinning. This is thickening. An object that has all kinds of concavities in it, fill in the concavities. So now, and we do this slightly differently, we complement the set when we're going to fatten. Okay? We complement it. Okay? Then we thin the complement. So we're thinning this out here. Okay? Now, one of the things that happens is we get unconnected points because of this algorithm, and you just have to remove unconnected ones, like that corner and this one. And look at that. That is a thickened version of that. It keeps that major okay, indentation, but all the others are filled in. So you can do all kinds of selective filling in. Now, a skeleton is actually pretty useful, particularly for robot grasping and stuff like that. A skeleton has a totally different kind of definition. It's the set of all maximum discs that you can fit inside the object, the set of the centers. And the idea is, what's a maximum disc? It's the largest disc that you can fit in that touches the boundary in at least two locations. So, for example, I put one right in here in the very middle, and notice it can actually touch it on three, and that's the largest. And the center of that element now is part of the skeleton. But I can travel up each of the arms, okay? And it's a slightly smaller circle, but notice that the centers form a straight line. Now, do you stop right there? No, you don't stop right there, because I said it's the largest circle that can fit in and still touch two circles. I can actually make, okay, circles which touch the boundary, okay, and they still fit inside, and you see what happens is it's sort of like it has fingers on the skeleton, which will go out and preserve the corners. Okay, now it can be defined in terms of unions of sets, and actually, we define it by recursive dilation. But I'm not going to get into all of those definitions. One of the really neat things is I can do the skeletonizing. This is the structuring element. Okay, and I just do recursive dilation. That's what adilated KV means. Take the original and dilate it. Erode it. Erode it once. Erode it twice. Erode it three times. Stop before you run out of things, because the next erosion would be nothing. That's not very useful. So go until you stop, okay? Then take that in each case and open it with B, okay? Get these, okay? Subtract it from the original. That gives what are called subskeletons, and then just add them all up, and there's the skeleton. So there are ways of doing skeletons. And by the way, here's a really, really important mathematical thing about skeletons. If I have the skeleton, I can simply dilate it back out, and I can always regrow exactly the original object. That's sort of neat. That might be useful in path planning and stuff like that. The fact that you can reduce it and then grow it back out to exactly the same thing. Here's handwriting analysis. This is actually much more complicated, but it's actually rather interesting. Okay? What you do is, this is sort of a thinning element for endpoints. We don't care what's there. You see, what we want to do is we want to remove protrusions. Okay? Because look at, and you have to step back. I have to really step back and see what that thing still looks like. You see, that's sort of an A, but there's a little messy thing right here. It's sort of like an A, like that. You want to remove that. You don't necessarily want to remove much else, so you sort of think of it topologically. What does this look like? Well, it's protrusions. Isn't this thing sticking out a protrusion? Okay, so rotate it in different directions. Up, down, whoops, up, down, left, and right. Basically, when that matches, remove the pixels. And this was done three times. Bang, bang, bang. I eliminated that, eliminated that, eliminated that. You can see it can remove the ends of paths or lines. Okay? Then I can actually look for something that's diagonally connected and rotate this. and say, I'll keep all the diagonally connected pixels. Okay? That could be an endpoint detector. Okay? So, I wrote along lines using the structuring element. That gets rid of these things, those extremities. I detect the endpoints, and then what I do is I'll do a dilation back. Okay? And then, if I union this and this, I get a fairly good image. Now notice, this kind of stuff is occurring way, way, way down at the pixel level. We're doing pixel by pixel. Okay? Now, with zeros and ones and binary images, this can run really fast. It's very different with grayscale. There is grayscale morphology. And if you get in, and that, by the way, this shows all of the different structuring elements used throughout the chapters, and you can see protrusions, diagonal connectivity, four connectivity, eight connectivity. This topology and set theory all based upon how pixels are connected. But how about doing it for waveforms? Okay? And what do we do? By the way, some of the figures in this chapter are wrong, and I've corrected them on the notes. Like this one is wrong. There should be a top chopped off. This is sort of a little similar to convolution, but it's just like what we did, but it's for waveforms. Here's a waveform. That's just a triangle waveform. Here's a structuring element. Okay? And actually, it's handy to write this because for those of you who are into signal processing, yeah, it does look like a convolution of sorts. And if you're not, the math is obvious anyway. We're going to convey, Okay. We are going to dilate a waveform. Okay, and it's max, okay, of, we're going to slide the waveform past the structuring element. Says that while we're sliding it, we don't move outside the domain of the function. That looks really, I mean, if you want to sit down and think about that, but what that means is, basically, I want to take the waveform, I want to, and we'll do it the opposite way, we take the structuring element, we add the two together, and we slide the structuring element along. So we take this little guy and we put it on top and slide it along. And what we want to do for every point is what is the maximum. We want to add these together. And you can sort of see what's going to happen. It starts out right here. And it would be exactly the height of this little structuring element above the waveform. And as we start moving it along, you see how it's sliding and sitting on top. Okay, it just moves up. What its effect is down here is it's simply increasing the height of the function by the height of the structuring element. Yes?
At the peak, as you do for the model, it's so much like it does have a point.
It does have a point, but think about it. Okay, it's here. Okay, what's the maximum? The maximum is that value when it's right here. And the center would be right there. Okay? So it's a maximum. Notice it can't go up any higher. So as I slide this over from here to where it's completely over, every one of those has the same height. So it flattens the tops. Okay? And what it will do, because we're going to do this with images, As we raise something up, what does it do? It makes images brighter. What's it also going to be doing? It's making it's making stuff in the image wider. So it's effectively dilating and brightening. And you'll see what happens with a bunch of these images. To zoom type. Yes. Not necessarily, but possibly. I'll show you the examples and what you think about it. Erosion is a little simpler, but it chops off the edges of objects, makes them smaller and dimmer, because I want to get a couple grayscale pictures in here. And notice, I don't know why, but all of the pictures are from this guy at Leica. I just don't understand why we have these pictures of this horse. Okay, but it's got good detail on the bridle. Okay, harness. And notice, what we happen is we dilate. And remember, dilating makes the waveform go up. It gets brighter. Bright objects get wider. So that, you see, that's exactly what it does. Here, we erode. What does it do? It reduces bright objects. Guess what? And it makes it darker. Okay? So you can get grayscale, and you can imagine you could do this in each color plane, or define a set which fits. You can have a three-dimensional structuring element, which is red, green, and blue. Now, you can do opening and closing. With an opening, you run a ball underneath, and the set of the uppermost points of the ball is the open waveform. You can do a closing, except the ball is on top, and the set of the bottommost points of the ball is your closed waveform. And you can open and close, and you can see, now you can start to do some interesting things with images. The original, an open image. And notice how it really shows differently in the bridle, but notice here how with the closing, it brings out details in dark areas. Okay? I mean, these might be ways of handling images. You can smooth an image as an opening followed by a closing. Technically, it should really bring everything back to where it was. Remember what we did with the fingerprints? That was effectively a smoothing. Opening followed by a closing. And notice, it really is somewhat of a low-pass filter. This is much more than we saw even with a Gaussian. This would be a big filter. Okay. So morphology really can remove a lot. There is a morphological gradient. Okay. And that actually works pretty well. Okay. Okay. The morphological gradient, or gradient, is a dilation. It is the dilated image. Dilated image minus the eroded image. So you make it bigger and you shrink it. And you subtract it, and what are you doing? You're getting boundaries. And that actually is really not too bad. That's a pretty good. That's got a lot of edge detail in there, and it was done in a completely different manner. We're almost done with the whole chapter. This is something now called a top hat. And it's the original image minus an opening. Okay? And it's really good at bringing out detail and shadows. Okay? So all I want to do here is let you have the idea. Now here's finally the last thing. Texture. We have not talked about texture in this course. Texture is really a computer vision course because people really get into it. And for those of you who are into it, we talk about texture grammars and how we can construct stuff in regular patterns. But this is interesting. How might you do things? You notice these are sort of bigger over here than these? How could you find the difference between them? Okay, how could you find the boundary? And one of the things that you can do is you repeatedly close the image, and the idea is that's going to remove all the small objects. Once you get all the small ones gone, then what you do is you open it once, and what you'll have is a white and a black. And then you can draw the boundary. You can do some really creative things. And here's the last one. This would be really tough. You can actually do a histogram of the size of the objects in there. In effect, what you're doing is you're taking a structuring element that you're going to continuously change the size of it. Okay? So you open it over and over and over again, the original image. But now you're saying, here's the structuring element. Then make it bigger. Here's the next structuring element. And each time you open it, and then you subtract the original and the open image. And then you look at the differences between all of those, and you can actually do a histogram of the sizes of the particles. Now, if you're into material analysis, texture analysis, all kinds of stuff, this is actually pretty useful. There are people that will pay for this kind of analysis of images. You could be analyzing cells, you could be analyzing textures of concrete, all kinds of things. And believe it or not, we did all of Chapter 9. You were wondering, I bet, whether we'd really be able to